Please, the dance is about to begin.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's mine.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine.
I sip the dumb peak watching Gandhi till I'm charged.
Hey, yo, what's going on? This is Aaron bringing you episode 129 of the Semi-Social Life of a Black Introvert podcast. Hope that you're having a wonderful day wherever you are all around the world. I hope that you are smiling. I hope that your energy is good. I hope that you are in a place of peace and rest. Yo, listen, it's summertime. I know you got a whole plan about being outside, you know what I'm saying, being in the streets, but you know, you deserve some rest. You deserve some lay down on the couch. Turn out the lights, light some candles, rest. I think we lead such busy lives. Our lives are filled with things to do, people to see, places to go. We got to hit this place, that place. We got to go on vacation. We got to go visit people, go see auntie, go see grandma, go see your kids, we got a whole lot of things to do. But one thing you need to see or the back of your eyelids. When you close your eyes and get some rest. You deserve a lot of things in life. A lot of things. Rest is something that you deserve because your rest will restore you. And when you're restored, you could really reap the benefits of your rewards. Oh my gosh, did you get that? I just said it. It made sense to me. Let me bring it back. When you are rested, you're restored, and you can reap the benefits of your rewards. It's a whole lot of reading that one, but I mean it. What's the point of reaping your reward if you're not rested? What's the point of reaping your reward, reaping the very thing that you've invested your time, your energy into if you're not rested? It'd be like showing up to the celebration, to your party, to your grand finale, and your eyelids are heavy. And your body is not rested enough to enjoy the very celebration of who you are. You need your rest. You need to restore your mind, your body, your soul. I was talking to someone today, and we were just talking about the value of rest. And slowing life down and making choices, making strategic choices that may not benefit our pockets, you know, and it may not benefit, they may not grow the money as fast as what it once did. You may have to turn down some gigs. You may have to turn down some opportunities. You may not get that check by showing up to that event. But what you do, you take that and you invest it back into yourself when getting rest. Money is not everything. Not all money is good. And even some of the good money is not great. Especially if you're not rested. So I'm going to challenge y'all to get some rest. Look, even my body is feeling it. The last like 3 days, y'all, I hit the couch. I was going to watch something on TV. My body was like, no, you're not, because you need some rest. I need a dream. I need to see the back of my eyelids. And I have a feeling that some of y'all out there need some rest too. Don't fight it. Go ahead and lay yourself down. I know you're going to get an invite somewhere. You know, there's a party going on. Someone's going to give you a call. Hey, do you want to go to this place and such and such? And normally you would, but maybe instead of seeing other people, seeing that movie, seeing that concert, seeing that show, seeing all these people, maybe you'll close your eyes and you'll see some insight into who you are. You'll close your eyes and you will dream and see the picture a little bit more clearer. Perhaps you'll sleep and I believe, you know, our spirits almost travel. Perhaps you'll go to sleep and you'll experience something new, something great, something that when you wake up, it'll put a smile on your face. Perhaps you just need some sleep, y'all. You've been burning that midnight oil. You've been putting in the work at the office. Maybe you just need some sleep. Go ahead and get it. Go ahead and get it. And don't feel bad about it. In fact, reward yourself with it. Get some rest. Because like I said, you don't want to get to the place of reaping your reward and you're not rested and you're certainly not restored. Y'all, I'm excited to continue this next chapter of Working While Black. I've gotten some good feedback. Please send this out to your folks. Continue to help my podcast grow. I don't say that enough, but I really do. I really want to grow within this podcast. So if this hits you, if this message hits you and you're like, yo, this really resonated with who I am, send it to somebody else that may need a hit too. And encourage them to send it on. That's the only way that I'll grow, that this podcast will grow, and that we'll all grow. And so please listen to it. Let it marinate within you. If you find it funny, insightful, whatever it may be, send it to your folks, all right? So we're going to get started on chapter 3 of Working While Black. And I'm going to call this one chapter 3, Black Magic. Y'all, I've worked at a bunch of places. I mean, y'all, I'm 38 years old, about to turn 39. I have a deep employment and work resume. I worked at restaurants. I've worked at community centers. I've worked in libraries. I've worked so many different organizations, nonprofit, for-profit. I've worked at institutes of higher learning. I've worked at some places. And one thing that has sort of stuck out to me, and I would say at least 90%, if not 95% of the jobs that I've worked at, is that a lot of my colleagues, a nice handful of my colleagues, believe that I have black magic. Now, what is black magic, y'all? Let me give you a situation, an instance when I was in high school and explain to you what black magic is. Y'all, I was working at this restaurant, right? And I was the only black male server. I was the shublack, the one I was the Jackie Robinson of black male servers. They had two other black female servers. And you know, they got their props too, and props to them, you know, because they really... I spoke on Black Synergy in episode 2, I believe. I appreciate them for showing me Black Synergy early. But anyway, I was the Jackie Robinson of this restaurant. I'm sure there were few before me, and I hope there are more after me, but I don't know. But anyway, I'm at this restaurant, and a Black family walks in. And they're not in my section. If you know anything about the restaurant industry, you have like sections of tables. You don't just go and take anyone's tables, because literally that will start a fight or at least a good cuss out, because restaurant folks are very territorial. Don't you take the table or you're taking the money. Taking my tables like taking my money. Right. So anyway, these black folks come in and they sit at a table, and the table is not in my section. But all of a sudden, people, my colleagues, my white coworkers, they became, let's just say, not as territorial as they normally were. One of them came over and said, you know what, Aaron, why don't you take this table? Why don't you take this table? Now, the first time it happened, I was like, oh, snap, you know, I'm new. You know, hey, maybe it's in the shift. Maybe they don't want to take this table. Maybe they're going to give me opportunity to, you know, to show me the ropes a little bit. So I was like, cool, you know, I'll take the table. The second time it happened, I was like, okay, you know, being sort of friendly. By the third time, I started seeing a pattern. Like, why are y'all giving me tables with nothing but black people? Like, what is it? What's going on so that every time a black family comes in here, y'all get real generous? Y'all, it happened again. And I asked the person, it's like, why are you giving me this table? Like, what's the reason? And they looked at me. They say, well, you know, they're black. You know, you're black. You'll get a better tip out of them because you're black. Now, let me go ahead and say this. This is one of many instances in my life in which I am 1,000% certain that generally white folks don't know black folks like black folks know white folks. Because if you knew anything about black folks, you would know that I'm not getting a tip based upon my blackness. I'm not, just because I'm black, you think I'm going to get money from other black folks? Do you know black people? Do you know that's, if anything, I may have to work harder. I may have to work hard. I may have to in order to get that tip, but I'm certainly not going to get more money, a bigger tip because I'm black. Because most of black folks I know, and they're good tippers. Most of black folks I know, they tip out of, let me tell you a secret, white folks, or why black folks, majority black folks tip. They tip if they get good customer service. That's it. They're tipping because, hey, did you keep we order waters and pops, you know what I'm saying? So we want both sort of filled up. If we're paying for it, we want it filled up, okay? So I don't care if it's water, pop. Black folks, we want both of those cups filled up, okay? And a pop does not need to be flat. If it is flat, just go change it out. Just be a good waiter. Be a good waitress. You being black has nothing to do with your tip, I would say, for the majority of black folks. But when my coworker said this, I didn't know that, A, that was a sentiment in restaurants, that black people don't tip. But B, I didn't know that this would almost introduce me to 20 years of white refusal. 20 years of white refusal to do your job and help or serve black customers or patrons. I didn't know that for the next 20 years, I would see this at 95, I would say 90, 95, I don't have my figures all the way right, but let's just go with that 90, 95% of the jobs that I worked. Some of my white colleagues refusing and openly refusing to help black customers or minority customers, openly refusing to do it and keeping their jobs. I could really do a whole podcast based upon that, which I will. But let's talk about why I was pointed to help this black customer, this black family to walk into the restaurant. I call it black magic. And black magic is what I assume that my white coworkers then and some, you know, even up until a couple years ago, assume that I have. And it's sort of intertwined with my cocoa butter essence. You know, that's also something that they assume that I have. And some even assume that I have this urban street, you know, background. Not all, but some assume that I have that. And these things and probably a couple other, factors too, including rap music and some other joints. All these things combined helps me when it comes to working with black customers. It gives me a one up. I turn into the black whisperer. This black magic helps me. Somehow I can influence black customers in order to get them to do what I want to do. And then we'll have a whole black magic experience. No, it's completely false. Just because I'm black does not mean I'm a black whisperer, that I have some sort of super magical black powers to work on black people and I speak the language of black folks and I get to, you know, I don't have it. But it's assumed. It was assumed upon 15-year-old Aaron. And it was assumed that 36-year-old Aaron had the same powers. You know, you could help them better. You're black. They're black. You know, y'all have that connection. Nah, it's not how it works. I seen this whole black magic thing manifest in so many different workplaces. And quite frankly, it's irritating. And it's frustrating. Because I, for over 20 years, have observed a number of white colleagues and co-workers opt out of doing their jobs and still keeping their jobs. Opting out of doing their jobs with a customer who happens to be a minority, or happens to be black, or happens to be African, or happens to be New American. They've opted out of doing their jobs, and it's been supported by management, by leadership, by people in charge, because of privilege. And sometimes because of the privilege of white tears. You know, I don't wish this, but in my black magic world, I wish that I could, in the course over the past 20 some odd years, tell a white manager, tell a white supervisor that I refuse to help this customer, that I refuse to serve this table, that I refuse to do my job when it comes to serving or helping white customers. Part of me wishes I could do that, but part of me absolutely does not want that type of privilege. I've seen it, y'all. I've heard it. Whether it be in a high school, being a high school at a restaurant, or being a professional in a well-known community organization. White refusal and still being able to maintain their jobs and employment. It blows my mind every time I've seen it. Black magic is not a thing. At least in this regard. I'm not sure about like the spiritual witchcraft and all that. That could be a thing. But I can tell you that this black magic ain't that black magic. And I can tell some of y'all who are listening to this will be like, yo, Aaron, we feel you. We seen this too. Because it wasn't just, I didn't just see that at the restaurant. I've seen it in places, y'all. Let me tell you. Now let's go a little deeper. I want to go a little deeper with y'all. Let there be a group of black teens or black kids. And if I'm walking by, if I'm working at a job, if those kids happen to get loud or whatever it may be, y'all, I've been in situations in which white folks, whether it be strangers on the streets or white colleagues, will look to me like, Aaron, you know, go work that black magic over there. Go get them to settle down, because they won't listen to us. They'll listen to you because you're black. Sprinkle some of that black magic on there. Do what you do. Work your black superpowers. And most times, and if not every time, that white refusal has happened. And I've stepped in, I've taken the customer, I've spoken to the kids, and though I love helping my people, I hate being the buffer between my white colleagues and black customers. I hate being that person. I loathe it. I have such disdain for it, because that's a lot of pressure to place upon one person. That is a lot of pressure. Go work your black magic so every black customer in which there's a problem, so every black customer that comes in here who you don't understand, who makes you uncomfortable, so every black customer who may not speak, the language because they're new Americans. So you got to look for me as opposed to doing your job. And so I hate it because of that. And I also hate it because a white refusal being allowed within the workplace, and that privilege showing up and showing out and being coddled and accepted when I can never exercise that type of privilege. I could never go into work and say, yo, I'm not helping any white customers today, how long will my black self keep a job? I'll tell you, it won't be long at all. And yet I've seen and witnessed co-workers and colleagues not only keep their jobs, maintain their jobs for years, but also elevate in positions. That is my issue with black magic. That is my issue, my problem, my greater problem with white refusal. I can recall a time in my life, in my work life, in which I brought this up to white management, in which I spoke upon my white colleagues not helping black customers. I remember bringing this up, and y'all, to be honest, I wasn't expecting some sort of radical change where my manager who happened to be white and the leadership that happened to be white, I wasn't expecting them to sing the black national anthem and you know, lift every voice and sing and put on cocoa butter and walk out and tell my white colleagues that they better submit and work with these black customers and you know, listen, I'm not expecting that. I wasn't expecting that. But I was expecting some support. If we're all in this together, right? That's what we say. If that's what y'all say, we're all in this together. Then maybe we could use this as a moment for growth, for building, for helping serve our customer base. That's what I was hoping for. But instead, what I received was pushback. It was pushback. I received pushback in this form. Well, you know, Aaron, you know, they may not be as comfortable working with customers as you. Maybe you could train them. Maybe you could train them to increase their comfort level. No, I'm not training them. That's your job. That's what you get paid for. Now, if you increase my pay, I will train them. But why would I do your job for them? That's not going to happen. And then it was phrased like, well, you know, everybody is we have individuals and certain people just don't feel comfortable. You know what I'm saying? No, I don't know what you're saying. Or maybe I do. What you're saying is that you are okay with white refusal. That you find it, not only, you will not only tolerate it, but you accept it within this workplace and workspace. And that my colleagues, my coworkers who could pull up a white card and say, I can't do this. Sometimes it's accompanied by white tears, y'all. If you know anything about white tears, maybe I'll do an episode on white tears. But when those white tears fall, y'all, all hell can break loose for black folks. And don't get any white tears in the mix because something's finna happen. People have literally lost their lives over white folks crying. Okay? And I'm not going to go too deep into it, but even in the workplace, those white tears can be really dangerous. Because it's almost, and in some ways, they are used to elicit emotion from superiors, from coworkers, from colleagues, from people in charge. And they're used, man, how am I going to say this? They're used almost as a tool of manipulation. That's the best way I can say it. To gain sympathy, empathy, favor, and privilege. I've seen those in 20 years too. Like, I want to be very clear when I say this. I don't have an in with black folks because I'm black. And to my white colleagues, you don't have an out with black folks because you're white. You don't have a get out of black free card because you're a white employee working in a place in which people of color frequent. That's not right. But it's both tolerated and accepted. I've had some white supervisors who knew it was wrong that my white colleagues would not help or refuse to help black customers or customers of color. They knew it was wrong, but they did nothing about it. They would make excuses. They will fall for the white tears. They would never address the issue. And then I had some white supervisors who accepted it. They didn't see anything wrong with it. They saw it as, oh, it's not that deep, Aaron. You're trying to look so deep into it. No, it's right there on the surface. You are okay with this. So which is worse? The person who knows it's wrong and does nothing about it, or the person who accepts it and is okay with it? I don't know if there's a worse person than this. I think they're both equally wrong and dangerous. Dangerous to people of color in the workplace. Dangerous to people of color who happen to be customers within that space. Dangerous to people of color in society. If you are willing to accept racism, whew, that's dangerous for me. If you're willing to overlook it, that's also dangerous and in many cases, deadly. Employers, organizations, managers, supervisors, skilled workers, co-workers, colleagues, do not buy into the fact that there's black magic and do not continue to allow white refusal. One, black magic is not real. The other, white refusal is completely real in its reality. It's stitched into America. It's stitched into the fabric of what this society, what this nation is. It's cloaked and it's hidden. And it's hiding in plain sight. Because, you know, we know there are racist folks out there. You have, you know, the Klan, you have these neo-Nazis, you have ex-presidents. You know, you have these people out there who are just blatant about the racism. But then you have a certain amount of folks who, as Hillary said and called these, you know, some of these folks, they're not deplorables. They know some black people. They have black, you know, maybe someone, you know, goes to the bars black, you know, they go their schools, you know, a couple black kids in their schools. You know, they're friendly with black people. I call them passive progressive, but they know some black people. They know Charles at the tennis club. They know Dave, the night janitor that they always say hello to. They know some black people. And yet, they're dangerous. They're dangerous because though they may know a couple black people, they may know some names, they may wave, they may even have some conversation or a relationship or two. And yeah, they may have voted for President Obama in 2012 and in 2016, which increased their knowledge of black people in their minds. They're dangerous because your refusal, your unwillingness to help, your refusal to do your job by pulling your white privilege card, by pulling your card of white refusal and relying on someone else's black magic, that's dangerous. It's dangerous because you pull that card when you want to. You'll pull the privilege card when it's convenient. You'll do just enough. You'll vote for the black president. You'll wave at Dave. You'll say hi to Charles at the tennis club. And you like the appearance of the 4 to 5 black children in your kids' class. It's diverse, even though the class is a class of 50. But it's dangerous because you'll pull that card of white refusal or that card of white privilege, and you know it ain't right, but you'll do it anyway. And you'll do it because you can get away with it. You'll do it. You'll cry those tears because they'll believe you. Those are your get out of black free tears. It's dangerous because you think you're doing the right thing. You think you're any different. You think that your actions are different from the blatant racist, from the neo-Nazi, from the Klan member. But you don't know, y'all are doing the same thing. Your refusal furthers the divide, further pushes black and brown and folks away. And your refusal says, I'm okay with that. Your white refusal in the workplace says, you're accepting of that. You'll tolerate it. You turn a blind eye to it. And your reliance on black magic is just like most magic. It is a sleight of hand to get folks to look away from your borderline racist or really absolutely in your face racist ways. So if you are a CEO, if you're on the board of directors, or if you just work at an organization, if you work at a company, if you just work around people, if you're a supervisor, if you're a manager, if you're a team lead, whatever you are, and you see someone or hear someone talk about black magic and asking one of their black coworkers, their colleagues, why don't you go help them because you're black? My challenge to y'all is correct it. Correct it. Address it. Don't put that person of color in the position of having to be the black savior or the black buffer. Put the onus, put the pressure back on that employee and address the situation. Don't turn a blind eye or have a deaf ear to what you just heard and witnessed. Because it's out there. Black magic and white refusal go hand in hand. And it's as American as apple pie or systemic racism and school to prison pipeline. You choose. But trust and believe, to not say something is really to say everything. And your silence truly is deadly. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. And as always, be well.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. The journey is over.